and welcome to a special bonus episode of the Shock Doctors podcast. I'm Jim Smith.
It's your lucky day. I'm Matt Gerandese.
And we're going to be sort of supplementing our discussion of Suspiria from the previous full episode.
It's the kind of movie that keeps rattling around inside your head a week or two after you've seen it.
Yeah, and you know, there were just some thoughts we had about the movie that seemed to be perhaps a little bit superfluous just for the purposes of a normal episode that was already kind of bursting at the seams, but at the same time we thought, you know, we might as well put them out there, particularly since we typically only update every other week, so.
Well, the film itself is bursting at the seams, so there's a lot of ground to cover. We just want to do it justice.
Absolutely. So, Matt, you want to start us off?
Yeah, one small point that I didn't mention was this business about the witches all voting. There's a lot of attention paid to the fact that they operate democratically. You know, every witch gets a vote, and the, I guess, electoral situation is that it's a dead heat between Helena Marcos and Madame Blanc. Is that her name? Tilda Swinton's character, one of her three characters. I guess Helena Marcos is one of them as well. So there's two Tilda Swintons, both running for the same office, which really you could do a lot worse.
We should be so lucky.
Yeah, we should be so lucky. I thought it was interesting that that much attention was paid to the voting, because it's not really a sham. Like it is a little bit, because it's kind of apparent that Helena Marcos is a fraud and not all she's cracked up to be, and she's sort of clinging to power by instilling fear in her subordinates, a fear that is kind of unjustified. But I just thought, given that this whole movie plays out in the shadows of World War II, it was sort of clever to show a coven of witches democratically electing an entity that was just pure evil, you know? Because obviously, you know, Hitler, as everyone never ceases to remind us these days, rose to power through fairly conventional means. So that seemed to be a riff on that. And that's something that I kind of wanted to throw in to our review, but I bit my tongue just because these ideas were sort of half-formed and I didn't want to overstay my welcome.
One of the things that I had meant to mention during our initial review, and it just kind of dropped out of my head at precisely the wrong time, is sort of the centrality of dance to this version of Suspiria as opposed to the Argento original.
Yeah, this is a big one. This, we kind of fucked up not not bringing this to your attention.
Yes, so for those of you who listened to the original and not this one, you're missing out. Not that you're going to hear me tell you that, but oh well.
Your life will be poorer for it, and you will never know why.
There'll always just be that little bit of a void inside.
Ah, too real, as the kids say.
Oh, yeah.
You were saying?
So, we touched on this just sort of obliquely in the main episode, but in the original Suspiria, yes, the film is set at a dance academy, but that's really just an excuse for Dario Argento to get a bunch of young women all cloistered together in the same place.
At his mercy.
Yeah, at his mercy. And also the three mothers, or at least the mother of size, to do the same.
Yeah.
But in the Guadagnino Suspiria, it's very much central to the film, both because the dance academy sort of offers this high stress environment which is conducive to frayed sanity, and
in a very black swan sort of way,
and sort of breaking down people's psyches and making them vulnerable to persuasion and delusion and all these sorts of things. But also the dancing is made central to the witches' machinations and their spells. We see this most prominently in the sequence where Susie is doing the big solo dance for Folk, where Olga Helga is trapped in the mirror room,
yeah,
and is getting bent into the quivering pile of flesh that she eventually becomes. It's obvious that the import is that the dance that Susie is doing is in a way a spell, which is just crushing Olga under its weight.
Yeah, the dancing itself is witchcraft.
Yes.
In Suspiria 2018, which is a marked difference over the original,
where it's more or less purely incidental.
Yeah, it's pretty arbitrary. The dance academy in the original Suspiria could have just been a finishing school, or anything else that would be kind of a honey trap for a bunch of young women, for Helena Marcos or Dario Argento to dispatch in a variety of beautiful and gruesome ways.
Yes.
And the Suspiria remake, to its credit, I think it's a good remake in that it looks at the source material, looks at decisions that were possibly made semi-arbitrarily, and reverse engineers them to make more sense. Like, for example, it looks at this dance academy and makes the dancing itself part of the occult machinations of this coven. It also looks at this all-female space, which in the original, to be fair, it's a 70s horror movie, giallo, Italian. It's an all-female space because that's their, like, lambs to the slaughter, slasher-wise. It's a bunch of young women being massacred, basically. And the Suspiria remake kind of takes that idea of it being a little female pocket dimension and tries to look at the potential upsides of that and sort of argue that it could be a bulwark against fascism or against the patriarchy. It takes the idea of female solidarity a lot more seriously than the original did. The original really doesn't go there at all, no. Frankly.
Yeah, no. To my recollection, Susie doesn't really make any friends at the academy in any kind of real way.
I mean, no, not sort of... not any that she hangs on to. They right. tend to, anytime a new character gets introduced, they tend to not survive for very long.
Whereas, obviously, Susie, I mean, you know, it turns out that Susie isn't even really the protagonist, strictly speaking, in that she ends up being one of the three mothers.
Yes.
But still, Susie befriends most prominently Sarah, who up until nearly the end is, I mean, she becomes a protagonist in her own right.
Yeah, she's a fairly robust character. Yeah.
Sort of throughout, she and Susie are very close. So, yes, as Matt said, female solidarity is given more than lip service in yeah. this version.
Well, that's one of the things you can do when your movie is a full hour longer than the movie it's based on. So that's part of it, too.
The other sequence where the dancing really seems to play a central part in the witch's rituals comes during the climax, where it's most concretely part of
a... Most transparently. Yeah,
transparently part of a ritual where, again, all of the witches and all of the dance students are down in this pit of hell dungeon area. And the dance students are sort of... Well, they're dancing around and...
Kind of thrashing, yeah.
Thrashing and feeding energy into this ritual that's supposed to transfer Helena Marcos into Susie's body in order to rejuvenate her. And it's helping to sort of build the crescendo, at least that is, until Susie reveals herself to be the mother of size and causes Helena Marcos to collapse mm-hmm. into even more of a heap than she already is.
a less mobile heap. Yeah. A more inert heap.
A burned and blackened heap.
Yes.
But also, after the orgy of blood that ensues immediately after that, the remaining members of the coven, the remaining acolytes, the dancers, are still dancing around, and Susie repeatedly instructs them, you know, keep dancing, it's beautiful. That's also sort of ties the dancing even more to a witchcraft ritual, because it's sort of the culmination of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Purification has taken place, and now this is the consummation of all of that.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, this emphasis on the dance being beautiful and being aesthetically pleasing, independent of it being a tool of darkness or whatever, you know, a supernatural device, I think is kind of interesting. This is one last point I want to make, contrasting the two Suspirias. In the original, as we've mentioned a few times, the Dance Academy is pretty much just a Venus flytrap. You know, it's just a coven of witches using a dance academy as a front, and that's it. And you kind of get the impression that the witches couldn't care less about the subterfuge, whereas in the remake, Tilda Swinton's primary character, Madame Blanc, is a dance instructor who is very dedicated to her craft. You know, she has very particular ideas about the form. She doesn't like being challenged artistically. She's an auteur, you know, is what we call them in the biz. And that's not something you get as much in the first Suspiria, if memory serves. It's more just the witches kind of being disciplinarians. But there's nowhere near the level of thought put into it as there is in the remake. I mean, these witches are running a dance academy that is actually meant to produce works of art that are edifying and worth watching for spectators, who many of whom have no idea who the actual string pullers are in this situation. So I think that's kind of neat. It makes the witches seem that much less nefarious, or at least one-dimensionally so. Tilda Swinton's character, particular, again, main character, Madame Blanc, it gives her a kind of humanity that wouldn't be there otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, considering that she is fundamentally one of the leaders of a coven of witches that is luring young women to their doom. And
yeah, driving them insane and then butchering them.
Yeah, draining them of their life force. Madame Blanc is oddly sympathetic in a lot of ways.
Right.
And this is really why. So.
Yeah, I think, because she's an artist, I think that really is key to her character. And, you know, the movie deals with the ways in which dance can be empowering for marginalized groups. It is literally supernaturally empowering in this case, where Tilda Swinton actually imparts magic dance powers to Susie at one point. Now, Susie very well might not have needed them, given what we learn about her later. But, you know, it's a literalization of the idea that dance can empower you to do, or, you know, any art medium can empower you to expand your potential and do things that you didn't realize you were capable of. This comes up again later when Madame Blanc really wants her to jump higher, break free of gravity, basically. And they get into kind of an artistic tiff over it. Again, it's just about pushing yourself, but in a way that seems genuine. The last thing I wanted to mention, now that I've had some time to dwell on it, is there's a kind of funny moment, sort of a throwaway line, near the beginning of the movie when Klemperer is walking down the street, and he passes someone that he knows, who says, "Oh, there's a lecture happening at the university tonight. Are you going?" And Klemperer says, "Oh, I don't know. Who is it?" And they say, "Lacan." And Klemperer goes, "Ah, Lacan," and just keeps walking. Now, I know very little about Lacanian psychoanalysis. Jim and I have both encountered Lacan in a film theory setting, and we've both failed to retain all or most of it. The only thing I know is Lacan's most famous idea, which is the mirror stage, which in grossly reductive terms is this idea that you achieve a moment of self-awareness at a young age that changes you irrevocably when you spy your reflection in a mirror or some other reflective surface, or see footage of yourself or a photograph of yourself, and I don't grasp the finer points of this because I haven't studied it in years and years, but it's a pivotal moment in human development, psychological development. That's the idea, basically, is that you are confronted by something that is both you and not you. And I think that the movie is doing something kind of canny and cagey that I don't fully understand when the first big murder set piece happens with a character being dashed repeatedly against the walls of a room of mirrors. You know, she's literally being bashed against her own reflection over and over again, like she's having some kind of hyper-violent Lacanian epiphany. And this, I think, is reflected, pun intended, in the finale as well, when you have a kind of mirroring going on, because you've got three discrete Tilda Swintons all violently colliding with one another as well. So, yeah, maybe Klemperer just has some, you know, disdain for Lacan that is never unpacked in the rest of the film. But, you know, you invoke Lacan in a kind of arty movie like this, he casts a big shadow over film theory. It's impossible for people to not want to foist some kind of meaning upon that. So I think that the murder in the mirror room has got to have something to do with Lacan. I just am not learned enough to tell you exactly what. Anyway, I've just started pulling on that thread. We'll see where it gets me. I mean, we're not going to do a follow-up to this, not about Suspiria anyway, but just something for you to look into on your own time if you're so inclined.
Yeah, that's right. We just gave you homework. What are you going to do about it?
Well, it's, yeah, again, strictly optional.
Well, anyhow, thanks for letting us empty our brains of the remaining Suspiria thoughts we had rattling around in there.
Yep. Waste not, want not.
Once again, I'm Jim Smith.
I'm Matt Gerandese.
And we are the Shock Doctors. We'll see you next week with our next full episode about the new film Overlord. See you then.